Good evening. You are listening to You're listening to The Talking Show on Kaechang Radio, Chinatown's only micro broadcasting radio station.
That's right. The pandemic took the other fuckers out.
Yeah. Good thing we had those deep pockets and all that Tesla stock. Yeah. Here we are. Nicholas Miller, Steve Cato, live in Chinatown.
It's true. And, you know, I've forgotten what it's like to stay up late for the actual, you know, like the first couple of times you're riding the high of, you know, the states reopened. We're back in the studio.
Yeah.
And now that we've been back for a little while, you know, I've gotten out of the habit of staying up late. When we started doing the show 10 years ago, I think both of us stayed up to like what, two every day anyway, pretty much. Like you'd be up this late for your own partying, working hard in the studio, jamming on stuff,
right?
You know, and now I'm 10 years older and I've gotten out of practice. And during the pandemic, you know, we're recording remotely. We were recording from like really different parts of the country for a long time.
It's,
you know,
true.
I was in Austin for a while. You know, it's like everything was just really different. And you could sort of take things at your leisure. You were working from home. You know, you could, I could do the show from bed.
It's true.
And so it's funny. It's like now I'm like tired.
Sweating it out. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Here we are at our real time slot, just like feeling the weight of an entire day pressing down on my middle-aged body.
It is true.
Yeah. But I mean, it's still great. Don't get me wrong. It's lovely to be back in Chinatown. Lovely to see that so many local businesses like Today, Tomorrow, Paper Your Friend are still in business.
How are you feeling yesterday?
Esquire.
Right.
Yeah, Today, Paper, Today, Tomorrow, Smile.
Yeah. Hey, how are you? How are you?
How are you?
How are you?
Yeah. All the businesses that make Chinatown feel like a community.
Yeah. You know what would be amazing is if the next trend in hip naming for coffee shops and, you know, zine bookstores and whatnot all had to do with trigonometry.
Oh.
It'd be like arc, sine, tangent.
Yeah. Yeah. Matrix transformation.
Yeah, exactly.
Linear algebra. Yeah.
or calculus.
Yeah.
Yeah. Double derivative with cheese.
Oh, wow.
That'd be really something.
Tangent.
Yeah. Well, because you'd keep learning. You know, you'd keep learning through life. I feel like I'm fully stocked up on greetings, which is all I'm getting from this wave
you can't,
of culture.
You can't learn anything more from the names of the businesses. You've already learned how to greet and ask polite questions, how to initiate small talk.
Yeah.
Yeah, what's left?
Right.
Science, math.
Yeah, let's try and learn something.
Just like, yeah, basically when businesses are just named after like stoichiometry.
Yeah.
Like just sort of collections of valence electrons and stuff like that.
In part, this is buried in my unconscious at the moment because, you know, during reopening, I've been playing a lot of soccer.
Ah, yeah. Congratulations.
With other primarily adult males.
Yeah.
And I've made friends with one of these males. Who is I guess like a preeminent oncologist
at
the medical center. And I went to this gentleman's website at the medical center, and like it's been a long time since I've read several paragraphs in English and understood absolutely nothing.
Yeah, right. Because even in adulthood, you feel like the grammar carries you along and you're like,
yeah,
oh, I don't know what some of these nouns mean, or this is a complicated multisyllabic chemical name or something like that, but it's going in this thing, or
right? No clue how this guy approaches.
What would it say?
I can't even recall it. But I mean, there were a few words I recognized, but otherwise, I thought
oncology.
This guy's onto something, something big.
You're like science. It's out there.
Yeah, there was. I mean, I recognized RNA tumor. Mm. There were several nouns I got, but as to the approach to these different things, I was.
Right,
I gotta,
or like
ask him,
or like what activities are transpiring,
yeah,
sort of between and around them.
When I thought of this, because I vaguely knew his profession,
yeah,
but the other night we showed up at the, before soccer at the same time. And,
yeah.
And he said, are you looking forward to playing? And I said, yeah, I find it to be a useful day to work through the stresses of the day.
Yeah.
And he's like, it'd take more than an hour and a half for me. And I thought, yeah, I guess if you're like an oncologist, that's a pretty stressful.
Is it though? I mean,
well, you're dealing with people near the end of life. All
not necessarily. I mean, you're
that's
just
what
dealing
he specializes
with,
oh. in. So he's got a tough.
Yeah, it is a
he's
tough
bracket.
He's got
to break tough news all day long.
That does suck. He's like, yeah. We got the tests and it's.
Yeah, it's complicated.
Because, yeah, otherwise you're just sort of like, well, there's these biological processes and it's not my job.
Yeah.
I just tell you what, I tell you the facts, tell you what we can do.
Yeah. Ask,
it's like
ask your healthcare professional.
Yeah. Or like, you know, it's not like he's a surgeon.
True.
You know, where it's just like your split second. I'm not trying to belittle this guy's work. It sounds like I'm trying to, what am I doing here?
I know he's a researcher, which I think is, you know, far more.
I think
speculative.
I think the stresses probably come from other researchers more than they come from. Like, he actually sees patients as a researcher.
I think so.
Hmm.
Well, and it's you know, because you have to conduct the research on people.
Not necessarily. You
I think
just
in this
gather
case
the information.
Does.
Oh. But then they've already got the bad news if they're his.
Yeah,
subjects.
I think it's like a last step kind of thing where it's like, well, we've tried all the normal things.
We did this thing.
Yeah. Here, why don't you try and learn something?
Yeah. At least we can learn something from you. Sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is probably very stressful.
Very stressful.
Mm.
Definitely more stressful than being a co-host of a weekly radio show.
No, it's a pleasure. And I'm so privileged to be able to earn such a robust living from this work.
It is true. We're trying to keep our salaries suppressed from the media as long as possible.
Yeah, yeah. And as long as K-Chung stays privately funded, it's none of your business.
Yeah. We're just hoping Solomon doesn't whistleblow. He's been blowing up a bunch of the other DJ spots. Saul.
It's weird, man. I mean, after all, you started this whole thing, man.
Yeah, yeah. You pulled out too early. You know, all the all the big dividends are just paying off.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. Now that the stock options are finally VCs pumping up the private stocks. It's,
yeah.
You decide to get all testy about
we
it.
We should tell our loyal listeners that we will be recording under the name Bezos FM pretty soon.
How humiliating is it that the millionaires all go up to space in the last week or so, but they all go up for like under 10 minutes?
Yeah.
What'd you gain? You're weightless for a second?
Maybe that's a long time in their day. Like that's like more than they spend with their kids probably.
Right, right. And like the amount of money that 10 minutes of leisure is worth.
Mm-hmm.
Is already like, oh, that was already several millions of dollars.
Yeah.
Of like lost income from, like that's what it costs for Jeff Bezos to take 10 minutes off.
It's true.
Yeah. It's stupid. I want them to go up, you know, guys go in the International Space Station for like months at a time.
Mm-hmm.
Hang out for a day.
Well,
orbit the whole fuck. Go around. See the whole thing. You built a space station. You built a spaceship. You built a space company. Why chicken out now? Go around the whole thing. See the whole thing.
Right.
Then come down.
You know, time is a very slippery dimension.
Tell me about it.
Because, you know, for example, all of this effort and whatnot for what seemed like a very short time, that's not so uncommon. And our guest tonight is very well aware of how much effort and time can go into what seems like a very short, dense experience.
That's true.
Yeah. And that's because our guest tonight works in animation.
Huh.
And what most people don't understand is that animation, even though it's now done with computers, can take an enormous amount of time.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Lots of GPUs, lots of processing, lots of clicks, lots of gestures on Wacom tablets.
Are they called Wacom tablets?
I don't know how to say it. Wacom?
Wacom, yeah, that's what I thought.
Wacom?
Yeah.
They both seem offensive. Wacom. Both pronunciations. Wacom.
Hmm.
It's It's an unfortunate word regardless.
Yeah,
it's probably
No one asked. No one asked me what I thought they should be called.
Yeah. But anywho,
jizz tablet. I thought jizz would be a great name for the tablet. Just had to get that off my chest. I've been holding that in since the tablet was invented 12 years ago.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well,
20 years ago.
Try and plug that Steve's new jizz tablet.
Yeah. Check it out. On Kickstarter. Let's get this ball rolling.
Right. Well, I think we'll have to develop that bit a little bit further. Anywho, we'd like to give a warm welcome tonight to a very well-known animator here in Los Angeles who's going to give a bit of advice to all of you young animators out there. And then we're going to play an important historical bit of talking that he did way back in the 1980s. So here we go. None other than animator legend John Musker.
Well, yeah, the question, you know, what would I say to young animators? I will be speaking, of course, as a dinosaur, you know, as a 40-year grizzled veteran, a seasoned veteran, or a washed-up hack. I'm not sure which of those it is, but I don't totally know how good my advice is. But I certainly still am a firm believer in drawing, even in this world of CG, that I feel like knowing how to draw is a good thing, and that most young people who are doing anything in any sort of visual aspect of the movie, of gaming or movies, if they're communicating in some way that involves an image, and they're not just a writer, a writer is great, but I'm saying if you're somebody that's communicating visually, whether or not you're an animator, or even you're a rigger, you're a modeler, you're doing surfacing, you're doing lighting in the CG world, or you're doing hand-drawn animation, storyboarding, character design, I think drawing is a good skill to have, just to communicate your ideas to other people. You really, I think, can be so much more ahead of the game, even if you're in the CG world. If you can express your ideas quickly in a drawing, even if you're thumbnailing, this is what I want to do with what I'm doing right now, and showing someone else what's in your head, as well as just having a lot of the skill sets that a person who draws knows, namely ideas about clarity, about staging, about perspective, about expression, about gesture. All those things can get wrapped up in drawing. So I would still recommend to most young people I would talk to, try and become the best draftsman you can be, given what you want to do. But so that is a very broad thing, but that can involve keeping a sketchbook, doing figure drawing classes when you can, drawing from a television, drawing the people you see around you, various online courses you can look at that can help supply you with things to draw and lessons about drawing. So that's certainly one thing. The other thing, it's sort of a weird, tough thing, but I would say don't be defensive about your work and show your work to other people. I think the more you can, part of your job in any aspect of this business very likely is going to be, you're going to be producing some form of artwork, whether or not it's drawn or it's CG or it's anything like that. And it is going to be shown to someone for their approval. And you have to get used to the idea of showing your work and taking criticism for your work. Sometimes the criticism is unwarranted, but many times it is warranted, and you have to start developing a bit of a thick skin enough that you can kind of distance yourself. I am my work, but I am not my work. My work is one thing, I have something else. And you have to learn how to take criticism and to be open to those kind of ideas and suggestions. Even to the extent, there's a very simple one, which even like when I used to draw, I was so self-conscious about my drawing, sketching, I couldn't go out in public and sketch because I'd be so intimidated about people looking over my shoulder, seeing what I drew, and, ooh, what are you looking at? And, do you like this? I don't know if I like it. I don't really like it either. I've gotten over that now. Now I draw wherever I go, and I think it's a good skill to have. And it's like, you know what, really, those people, they may look over your shoulder, but they sort of don't care. You're really in your own world drawing. It's you and your subject, and it's a fun pursuit, and it's a discipline, and you have to get used to criticism. And the other thing that I would say is you have to learn the difference, and it's an ongoing thing always. There's a couple things, but it's a young person in the industry. What you have in your head that you're trying to communicate and what other people get from what you're communicating, those are not necessarily one-to-one. They're not necessarily the same thing. So you may be convinced, this is what I'm saying. How could you be hearing it any differently? I can't say it any plainer than this. And then it turns out when you're in a medium like we work in, storytelling, filmmaking, games, any of those things, sometimes what you're sure of, you're communicating, is not what you're communicating. And you have to develop, basically be open to the possibility. And you get that even by showing your work where you say, did you get that? Or what did you get from what I just did? And they say it back to you, and it's not what you think you said at all. And so you have to learn that there is a difference and that communication is a big part of what you do, whether or not it's in a drawing, it's in words, it's in a design, it's in any of those things. And you have to start analyzing, if people aren't getting it, where is the problem coming in? What aspect of what you're doing is not communicating? In storytelling, it's a little bit, you know, we had trouble with a roof in our house, and we had a flat roof. You should never have a house with a flat roof because they, you know, the water puddles and you get a leak. But the leak often doesn't come where the puddle is or where the source of the problem is. The water's getting in over here and it sits under the roof and it runs and it comes out over here. And stories and films can be that way too, where the spot where the leak is over here. But the real problem is actually over here, where you didn't set up the story idea or you people. When you make a film or any of these artworks, the movie is like a train and you have to get people to get on the train with you. And if you don't, they're still at the station and you've gone well down the tracks and guess what? They never got on with you, or you didn't realize it and a third of the way in the trip you did something that dislodged them and they're sitting next to the tracks back there and the train is still rolling. And to get them back on the train may be impossible at that point. Maybe that you just can't. So you've got to make extra sure that as you're leaving the station and as the track is train rolling down the track, they're with you, because if they're not, you may never get them back. I'm rambling, but there's at least one other thing, which is an essential idea. Again, young people, this is a more broad thing, but when you are trying to communicate, and it doesn't, there's some problem there, you have to figure out, in storytelling, this is sort of a storytelling note, is the issue with the idea itself. The idea itself is flawed. There's something about the idea that doesn't work. Or is it your communication of the idea that doesn't work? Like, I'm not articulating the idea very well. The idea is sound, but there's something that's getting in the way of my idea. Whether that's a conflicting thing that sort of neutralizes my idea, there's a confusion, there's a clarity issue, or there's something else that's just like it, or there's something that's the thing that I want to have impact if it's following something that actually has more impact, and so I can't get this to have enough impact without taking this back down, so this can relatively be bigger than that one. All those things you have to take into account. But there are times where the idea itself may be sound and it's just some issue like that. But there are other times where, no, there is something in that idea that doesn't work. And until you fix the idea, these other things that depend on the success of that idea will also not work. And that's just an ongoing, every project you run into those things, you have to evaluate those. It's easy to lose your objectivity in any of these long-term projects like I do, but even shorter-term things, television shows, games and that, animation, you can get in the weeds kind of and lose your objectivity. So whatever you can do to help restore your objectivity, to see it from outside yourself, showing it to people, getting reaction, getting feedback, even very informally, I think it's just a great, helpful tool. And the corollary thing to all that, be your own worst critic. Don't be open to criticism, but be hard on yourself. I would say somewhat. You don't have to be, I'm good enough, and I'm all this self-affirmant. You'll get some of that, but really just challenge. Is what I'm doing, here's things that I like and I've admired and that I think really communicate. You don't have to duplicate that stuff, but does your stuff work as well as that? Are you communicating your ideas as effectively as you think you could? What could you do that would be stronger? What could I do that will clear away some of the stuff that gets in the way of my idea coming across? The more you can do that, I think the quicker you will improve your own work and you will increase your value in the marketplace to the people that hire you, because you have a more objective way of looking at your work and other people's, and you have tools with which to analyze your own work when it is bumpy and it is not quite succeeding. That's a very long answer. I'm sorry.
Thing. just in time. First Aid is rolling up here on May 14th. The event is the first annual Disney Animators versus the Producers Match of the Century, or at least of the week. And here we have the animation team consisting of Tim Burton, Jerry Reese, Mike Gabriel on the far side, Jay Jackson, Daryl Van Sitters, Chris Buck. Over here, swinging over to... Are you filming?
We're going.
Okay. On the producers team, we have Jerry Cortland, Jan Williams, Kevin Corcoran. On the far side, Ron Miller, Tom Leach, and Mark Sturtevant in the near foreground. We've got a lot of people in the way here, but I'll try and describe the action as it unfolds. Jerry Cortland going up high. Lou Dabney cheating! Cheating! Okay. The action is for you, and so is the camera work. Kevin Corcoran leaping high into the air. Ron Miller batting it over. Jay Jackson, one of the standouts on that team. Tim Burton, Batman, you see his shirt. He's the one who did that. Tim Burton, soon to go on Black Cauldron. Okay. And look at this, out of bounds. That's Cynthia Prince, the staff photographer over on the far side there. Game point right here. The score is what, 14-something? 14-2, as anyone can plainly see. And a hard serve by Mike Gabriel. Jen Williams fumbles. I'm out of the way. And look.
Don't win.
Tensions are mounting. The ball is flying. Insults are rampant. A high spike. Oh, and Ron Miller. Okay, we just witnessed the end of the first game of this three-game competition, the animators defeating the producers 15-2. We're in the midst of the second game. Actually, we're in the beginning of the second game. Dust is flying here. The animators, with their agility and speed, have seemed to outmaneuver some of these producers. Oh, and they've hit the corners they've been doing all day. Amazing. We're putting it in his pocket right now. Jan Williams bats the ball back over to Mike Gabriel, who's serving in the far corner now. One of the brilliant servers on this team. A spinning serve, served hit back by Jerry Cortland. Chris Buck, an angle shot, short, drops it. Ron Miller over the net. And keeps it low, Jerry Reese with his amazing agility, and oh, but he can't do it, and they get a point for the producers, I'm sad to say. This is the ball coming into the foreground here. Tom Leach serving the ball on the far side. Jay Jackson sets it up. Kevin Corcoran back. Ron Miller tries to save it. And the ball bounces off his head. The rest is self-explanatory. How much film do we have left?
A few seconds.
Jerry Reese, the little bundle of fire. Blast a serve. Daryl Van Sitters, with fire in his eye, hits it over. Jay Jackson again, backing him up. The animators, you can tell, rarely spike because none of them can jump high enough. 0-1, animators' favor at the moment. We're still in the second game. The action continues to be furious. Long volleys are everywhere. Kevin Corcoran scrambling, and there again we see the importance of footwork and alertness, anticipation. Animation. In animation, we of course always use anticipation. In this game, only more so. Jay Jackson again showing the form that has put him solidly on the animator's side. Oh! And can they save this? It'll be a miracle if they do. And they didn't. No miracles today, folks. I'm sorry.
Here we go.
Harry Saban in the foreground here shooting action photos, which will be seen later, I'm sure. Jan Williams pops it high in the air. Mark Sturtevant bats it up. Jerry Cortland tries angled over and he can't. Tangled up in the net and a camera. Tim Burton, right his serve. He had an erratic first game in serving, but he was excellent in returning. Kevin Corcoran bats it back. Now Jay Jackson, Tom Leach, Daryl Van Sitters, Ron Miller. Oh, no. And look at this. The touch of his mounting, and uh-oh. And here it goes. He's got to put it over, and he does. Jerry Reese bats it back. Into the corner. Mark Sturman up in the air. Jerry Cortland tries to set Jan Williams up, and they put it over. A long volley here. A lot of tension. Uh-oh, it's up in the air. They're going to scramble for it. There's an open position. Oh, and they can't take advantage of it as Jan Williams pops it into the net. Backman, you see his name. A hard server. There he goes. He gives him a spinning high serve. Jerry Cortland drops it over, and they get up and they get the serve, not a point, for the producers. The producers seem to be breathing hard here.
What is it? What score?
Well, the action is fast and furious here as the game continues at a furious pace with breakneck action, much like our daily routine at the studio, wherein we all rush from room to room, busy doing our animation chores, just like this game you see in front of you. It's that exciting. We're here in the closing minutes of the second game, and we're trying to focus quickly. Yeah, I believe the score is something like 14-6 or something. Animators are ahead. There's a lot of huffing and puffing going on one of the teams. I won't mention which. Oh, but the producers get back the ball, and they still have a chance. And let's turn off the film for a second. We're resuming action here where we've got the closing minutes. Desperation now. Oh! And that was it. The animators just defeated 15-something. I don't know, 6 or whatever. And the dramatic handshakes all around. A lot of sweat flying out there. The last shot was a stunning, crushing shot by Mike Gabriel. There's a lot of riffraff going on, and there's a lot of money I see out on the field there, but I'm not sure which team has it. And I think we should pan the crowd over there, too. Interviews, come on, good idea.
The patio.
Okay.
So we can sweat there a little bit.
What do you attribute this victory to?
Luck.
Wow, so volleyball.
I never think about it.
I mean, yeah. I mean, it makes a lot of sense. It's the verb and then the noun.
Volleyball.
Yeah.
Tells you what you use.
More so than like, you know, basketball. That makes no sense.
I know there's baskets and balls.
Yeah, but what you would do with it.
No, yeah, it's true. One can only presume from the name.
Yeah.
Hockey.
Football makes no sense in America.
In America.
Yeah.
It makes perfect sense in the rest of the world. So it tells you exactly where to connect, what part of your body to connect the
what
ball
to. Touch
to.
The ball
yeah,
with,
yeah.
Wacom tablet, no sense.
No, it's
zero
it's
sense.
White jizz. but yeah, no. I it's funny. Do you ever think about volleyball? I know that you practice a sport, you know,
yeah.
But, like, it's different. You're organizing and making time to do that. But like mm-hmm. you and some friends gather for ludic fun times. And like, for example, we've gone bowling before.
It's true.
You're like, oh, let's get together with some friends, you know, other talking show guests, Chris mm-hmm. Lakshmi,
mm-hmm.
Jeffrey Stuker, and yep. let's go bowling, you know,
yep.
We a group of friends came up with an activity to do together that none of us particularly practice with
no
seriousness or regularity. I've done a little bit of recreational soccer, you mm-hmm. know, just as fun times. You know, I've
yeah.
also thrown a football at the beach, thrown
there you
a frisbee.
Go.
You know, it is weird that I throw the football with my hands.
Yeah,
you know, but.
Handball was taken.
Yeah, I guess it totally was. but yeah, no one's ever been like, let's play some let's get the old volleyball out.
No. They should rename American football helmet ball.
Well, the helmet and the ball don't touch.
I know, but it's concise enough, and I feel like it makes sense. And
you kick it so rarely.
It's the only sport I know that involves a ball and a helmet.
It is.
Hockey doesn't have a ball.
Lacrosse.
True.
High lie.
Lacrosse has it. Lacrosse has a great name already. There's no need to tamper with that.
It is weird.
Lacrosse. And high lie as well. No, don't touch
name.
That one.
Yeah,
don't
it's
touch
true.
That one.
It's true. If anything, like similar to how I think football sort of stole football from actual soccer.
Yeah.
I feel like someone's out there should just start calling some totally other thing high lie.
Like ping pong is now
yeah,
called
it's called high lie now. Yeah. You know, it's like in America they call this high lie.
Yeah, ping pong also. Don't touch that one. Great name.
Table tennis still good too.
Also great.
tells you exactly what's going on.
Yep.
But
tennis should try to colonize the name.
Tennis should be highlight.
Handball.
Tennis should just be called highlight.
Right.
In America, they call tennis highlight.
It turns out tennis has purchased the name handball just so that handball cannot use it anymore. They don't want tennis to be called.
You know, there is ambiguity about handball.
Oh, really?
There's two kinds of handball.
Mamma mia.
There's handball that is played between two competitors competing as individuals.
Where they slap the ball against the wall.
In a court. Yeah, similar to squash, basically, but without rackets.
Okay.
Former guest on the talking show, Leroy Stevens, was the world number one 14-year-old at this sport.
Really?
And then there's an Olympic sport called handball that is basically like basketball without dribbling. It's a team sport.
You run and chuck the ball into a hoop?
You run and pass the ball between you and your teammates, and someone tosses it into a net, like a soccer net.
Amazing.
Yeah. Well, you can bounce the ball on the ground between players. So I could like bounce it to you.
Yeah.
Underneath, you know, an opponent's legs, for example, or something like that. But I could not like, I wouldn't be allowed to like dribble.
Right. I mean, all I know about Hi-Li is that beautiful device they use to hurl the ball
thing.
And that the scoop, yeah, the long scoop, and also that the ball travels at an obscene speed.
Because of the scoop.
Because of the scoop and the technique. But I don't
And
understand.
People die.
Yeah. What is the function other than that? What are the objectives of the game?
It's a wall sport.
Okay. So they're hurling that ball at the wall at absurd speeds.
Everyone's facing the same direction.
Okay.
So like the competitors are all facing the wall and catching the ball off the wall and whipping it at the wall.
Okay.
And the unfortunate accidents occur in Hi-Li when someone in front of the ball, when a player sort of jumps or finds their way in front of the ball, path of the ball towards the wall.
Right.
Where it's moving at such obscene speeds and then it kills people.
I don't think it'll be taking up that game. But to answer your question, no, I don't think about volleyball. And if I do, I only think of it in the context of the film Top Gun by Tony Scott.
Which I also don't think about Top Gun ever.
Okay.
But I mean,
not even when you drive like down to San Diego and you're driving past like all of like.
See, one of the things I also never do is I never drive to San Diego.
You only fly.
I've never been to San Diego.
You only to San Diego.
I enter a scoop and I'm shot to the Mexican border. No, I guess I've been to San Diego like three times.
Okay.
But I don't, having never really seen Top Gun, like I saw it as a child, but having never like fully realized Top Gun and having had no familial investment in flying.
True.
I was like, oh, well, that's there if I ever need to watch it. But, you know, like, meanwhile, I will learn a lot about the movie, both of the Gremlins movies, for example. You know, it's like,
okay.
Which I feel is like relatable.
The Kato's had a lot of investment in Gremlins.
Yeah, like there's a lot of Gremlins. There's Gremlins all over the place, but like none of us are flying Air Force fighter jets. You know, like none of us are flying aces.
Yeah.
But Gremlins,
national security and supposed freedom actually exists through an intricate network of Gremlins. This whole like F-18 thing is a lie.
It's a hoax. I mean, you know. As an Asian Canadian family, one thing that I can say is true is at the beginning of the movie where, the first Gremlins movie where Billy's father is in Chinatown and purchases a Mogwai from a Chinese guy in a curio shop.
Right.
We know all about those.
Yeah.
It's an Asian lore thing. Everyone knows all about the Gremlins.
The Mogwais. Okay.
Yeah. We just haven't been, you don't talk about it, but.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's like, we're like, yeah, see what happens when you let white people have the Gremlins. It's like, they can't be trusted with the Gremlins.
I see.
This is what, and no one's getting a fighter jet. So that's why it's like, we're like, oh yeah, the Gremlins. We know about that. I don't know. I don't think about volleyball. I seldom think about San Diego.
Okay.
When I think about San Diego, I think of the Louis Kahn Salk Institute. I think it's a beautiful building, and I like to visit when I'm in town.
Who built it? Who designed it? Louis Kahn.
Louis Kahn.
Have you seen the Louis Kahn documentary?
No, I heard it was good.
I don't remember it being...
My Architect? Is that what it's called?
Yeah, My Architect, exactly. I mean, it'd be hard to botch that one. Those buildings are really interesting.
Yeah, they are cool.
But I remember if I remember correctly, the guy who's narrating it, who's
his
on
son.
Screen. Is it his son?
I think so.
He's a dancer or something?
Something like that, but it's like Louis Kahn's son.
Well, I remember vaguely, this was many years ago, him talking about how musical that building is and how inspiring. And then it cuts to him doing like really kind of like fanciful rollerblading in the courtyard.
Ooh.
Like kind of like a figure skating style rollerblading in the courtyard to, you know, accentuate the musicality of the building.
Ooh, that's so cool.
Yeah, this might require a talking show field trip.
Yeah. We'll come to you live from the beautiful ocean view at the Salk Institute. Have you been in person?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's lovely.
And you get all the, you can look through the windows and they're all writing down. I mean, they're doing the same thing that my soccer friend is probably doing.
Yeah,
like
science.
There's like some kind of big science.
Yeah,
it
yeah.
It looks real complex in each of the offices.
Yeah. Do you ever get into Mario Botta?
I don't know who that is.
It's a Swiss-Italian architect who had the best apprenticeship roster, where it was like Le Corbusier, Louis Kahn, and Carlo Scarpa.
Okay.
You know, just for like, so who'd you study with? He's like, well, Corb, then Louis Kahn, then Carlo Scarpa at school.
Okay.
He went to the architecture school in Venice.
He apprenticed with those people, not the other way around. It'd be amazing if like he had attracted all that.
No, there was. I mean, they're all so much older.
True.
Like, Corb's so much older than Kahn is so much older than... Mm-hmm. I guess Kahn and Scarpa would be the same age.
Mm-hmm.
Or Scarpa's the same age as Corb, but different scenes or something like that. But the age gap's hard to bridge.
But also architects seem like... It's like a long game.
Yeah, you don't get started till later anyway. But so anyway, he's like a really fantastic, you know, Swiss Italian postmodernist, sort of like Louis Kahn mixed with Memphis and Venturi kind of.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, maybe not less fun than Memphis, more Venturi or Aldo Rossi or something like that.
Okay.
But just like a really fun approach to mass and, great brick texturing, which is one of the reasons I just bring him up in case you also, jammed on that topic. But
I do have an update on our recent guest, Michael Graves.
Mm. Oh yeah.
Still dead. But if you'd like to follow the hashtag on Instagram, Michael Graves, hashtag Michael Graves, it's a wonderful hashtag.
Why?
Because
it has his things.
Well, there seems to be like a kind of sludge metal musician called Michael Graves.
No.
So, which is like, you know, like kind of like drawings of zombies and metal music and whatnot. So I'd say like there'd be like, you know, three really tasteful teapots and then like sludge metal zombie.
Duh. Yeah. That rules.
Yeah. Because usually, you know, like hashtags can get diluted. It's the sad state of the world.
It's true.
But rarely is it just so like... binary.
Two,
yeah, yeah. Just like two yeah, it's just like high middle brow postmodernism,
yeah,
and sludge metal,
the strongest middle brow. That's
I hope
great.
It's his son. That's what I'm hoping.
Yeah, Michael Graves Jr.
Yeah, Michael Graves Jr. Yeah,
that rules. Yeah. I and the Graves.
Exactly.
It's like Graves. Oh, spooky. I went to another Dodgers game the other day.
Did
yesterday
we need to have an intervention, Steve?
It's my in-laws. They are obsessed with baseball now, and they are obsessed with the San Francisco Giants.
Okay.
And so whenever they're playing the Dodgers, the pressure is on. So I went to the baseball game yesterday and was discussing with my brother-in-law about metal bands interacting with Major League Baseball, because apparently there's quite a relationship between Metallica and the Giants, and there's a lot of like SF Giants Metallica cross-branded merch. And then I saw this great t-shirt that was like Los Angeles Dodgers Slayer, where the LA and Slayer is the LA Dodgers logo.
Okay.
And I was like, you know, another area where Los Angeles is supreme because Slayer is obviously a way better band than Metallica. But then both of us were like, but what happens if like the Giants got Primus cross-branded merch? And it'd be like, it'd be tough.
You know what could, I mean, maybe you like going to all these Giants versus Dodgers baseball games, but what...
It's a little stressful actually because I'm
okay,
on the other
well,
side from
I
my
I have
in-laws.
A potential antidote.
Oh, what is it?
You should show your in-laws the Tony Scott film, The Fan.
Oh, what's that about?
It's, you know, like I only read the first sentence of the synopsis before I started watching it a few nights ago, which just said like, you know, diehard baseball fan, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And I thought, okay, whatever.
Yeah.
I'm
going to catch up with all this Tony Scott filmography anyway.
Yeah.
Might
I'm
as well.
Trying to deal with the Scott brothers.
Yeah.
So, fine. Let's put it in. Let's put it in a night where Ella's out of town.
Just in case it sucks.
It has the word baseball in the title.
Yeah.
Or in the synopsis. Robert De Niro is a fine knives salesman.
Like at Ross Cutlery downtown, like that kind of scene?
Exactly. Like, you know, kind of the small business been around forever. They sell all the knives to like the sporting goods stores.
Yeah.
No, more like
oh, outdoor. Gotcha,
outdoor
gotcha.
Knives.
Throwing knives, things of this nature.
Yeah, yeah. So he's, you know, has violence at heart, and he's a diehard Giants fan.
Okay.
He is divorced.
It's set in San Francisco, this film.
Entirely set in San Francisco. And let's just say this, his obsession with the Giants becomes deadly.
Listeners can't see what's going on in the studio, but both of us just sealed our lips and raised our eyebrows.
It's true.
On the word deadly.
I'll say no more because I don't want to ruin this classic 90s hit for all of you out there. But if you have in-laws out there who are obsessed with the Giants and you need an antidote to this social conundrum.
Guys, why don't we watch this Tony Scott movie?
The Fan.
Throws De Niro.
It's got Robert De Niro. And it's about the Giants.
You love the Giants.
You love the Giants.
Los Gigantes.
Yeah. And Wesley Snipes.
Oh, no way. Cool.
Yeah.
Does he play a baseball player?
He does. Rayburn. Yeah.
Wow. You know what I like
He's
about...
He's got amazing outfits in the film. Like, just amazing.
What year of the 90s is this?
I think it's 96.
Cool. Deep 90s.
Yeah.
Full.
Yeah. It's really great. I remember, like short sleeve turtlenecks.
Oh, yeah. That's the kind of thing Wesley Snipes was really like. Also in the Blade movies, I feel like there was like sleeveless turtlenecks.
Well, he had a vest, a lot of it.
Yeah. But like he'd take it off and he'd be wearing like a sleeveless turtleneck under his like sort of weapon vest, under his trench coat, under his classic 90s layering.
Yeah.
Pointed like, goatee.
Like a designer Letterman jacket with like a balloon, like balloon print pants. It's good looks.
It's amazing.
Good looks.
Rayburn.
Yeah. Well, the risks of being a diehard sports fan are all laid bare in the Tony Scott film, The Fan. So have at it.
Yeah. And the producers did lose at volleyball, which I think is, a labor story worth highlighting there too.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. The working guys, not management.
Exactly. Yeah. Which is definitely our stance until... We inked the full contract with Jeff Bezos about turning over K-Chung.
Bezos FM. The only Chinatown micro-broadcasting solution. Yeah. Thank you, Blue Origin.
Yeah.
For all you've done.
Yeah.
He thanked all the Amazon employees for making him rich.
Amazing.
He's like, wow, after landing, just got to thank all the Amazon employees for making me rich enough to have this hobby.
Yeah, thanks, guys. I'm sure this was your raison d'être.
I'm sure this was worth it for you now that I've said that. I know, right?
Yeah.
And he's wearing a cowboy hat.
I know. I saw a good meme on the internet that was
hold on, let me guess. Does this look like a divorced man to you?
No, it was like he's wearing the Blue Origin jumpsuit and the cowboy hat.
Yeah.
And then the caption said, "This is the worst thing Jeff Bezos has ever done," and then it highlighted that he was wearing a watch on the outside of the long sleeve.
Oh, like Johnny, what's his name? The Fiat guy.
Yeah. It's just a bad look. Obviously, he's done worse things.
No,
than
the
that.
Fiat guy made it look cool.
Okay, well, I can assure you, Jeff did not make it look
cool. No, nothing he does looks cool.
No.
Former talking show guest Thomas Hutton vehemently defended the look of wearing the watch on the outside of the shirt.
Ooh.
What's his name? He's an icon of masculine style. I think he looks as good as Thomas Hutton sounds.
Oh my gosh.
And he's an Italian industrialist. He ran Fiat after the war. Incredible wraparound shades. You can only imagine the kinds of designer LSE teapots and shit that were just like flying around that guy's life world.
Yeah.
Anyway.
And now his kids just collect Michael Graves records.
Okay. Good night, Chinatown. Good night. Good night.